Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Hi, welcome to the Football Writers Podcast. My name's Mike Calvin. I'm joined by John Cross of the Daily Mirror and Miguel Delaney of the Sunday Independent. Manchester United are bang in trouble. Three defeats in a week and an unbalanced team chosen on ego and fading reputation. Is this time for Jose to admit his mistakes, John?
Well, I certainly think he's been trying to pass the buck to absolutely everybody else but himself. I mean, if it's not Luke Shaw, it's about players not being able to take responsibility and maybe even feeling the pressure of not being able to handle that pressure of playing for Manchester United. And I do think Mourinho, somewhere in there, I think that we're seeing so many familiar traits from last season. I think when he had that meltdown at Chelsea, when I do think that kind of we found out that blaming players and shifting the blame onto players creates one thing, and that's generally a dressing room revolt. And I think this time he's got to be very careful of that. I mean, don't get me wrong, I think kind of working out players and man-managing the players in public has worked for Mourinho in the past. I mean, look at Joe Cole, and I think he's sort of kind of first in instance at Chelsea, really. But I think Mourinho this time has got a lot of egos to manage, a bigger situation than maybe he thought. Certainly a lot of square pegs into round holes that's not working in midfield, particularly at the moment. He's got to find that balance, which he clearly hasn't found yet. But I do think Mourinho, it can only regain some of the respect from that dressing room by actually saying, look, I've made mistakes as well, and it's time for me to front those up.
And the comparisons, Miguel, with Pep Guardiola will be inevitable and damning.
Yeah, I mean, it's only two league defeats, but I think there are a few kind of big concerns for United. I mean, the City game kind of summed it up in something. I mean, Guardiola's attacking football is famously more complex to coach, more difficult to enact, and yet City were so far ahead of United in terms of what they did and how they went about their job. And I think the kind of Claudio Bravo situation almost, it bailed out Mourinho a little bit, because I think had he not suffered that kind of blow to his confidence and the way it affected the rest of the game, that could genuinely have been humiliating for United. It could have been a 4-0. But basically, City kind of just lost their impetus a little bit. But I mean, whereas they obviously immediately went, they've escalated again, superb again on Saturday. United, you see the same issues on Sunday, even the way they ended the game. It was like Chelsea last season. I remember hearing from someone close to the Chelsea camp that Mourinho actually doesn't do too much attacking coaching, because he usually generally gets in quality players and kind of expects to trust them. But the problem, I suppose, then is when you do need a design, they're found wanting. And that can be seen in the City game and again against Watford, where they're basically just pumping balls. There was no shape to what they were doing. And then they were caught out between the City game and then the United, and then the Watford game yesterday as well. I mean, two very similar goals, particularly yesterday.
Mm. 16 defeats in his last 34 games. When does that Chelsea situation proved to be more than the blip?
I think it already is, because I do think that having had three defeats in a row, three defeats in 8 days, we're immediately looking back at what happened with Chelsea. And that is the hangover. And that is the kind of the elephant in the room, really. And we were immediately questioning, sort of saying, was that a Chelsea kind of meltdown or was it a Mourinho meltdown? Has the magic faded already and has it gone? And we're left wondering, actually, the magic and the facade being stripped away from the players, but also have Manchester United hired? It's kind of the special one without his special powers anymore. I think it's as simple as that. It was really interesting. I was at Chelsea Liverpool Friday night, and Antonio Conte was raising the point. Actually, some of the players are still suffering from the kind of the hangover from last season. Well, to my mind, at the moment, I think that the way that Mourinho is kind of trying to publicly absolve blame from himself, I think that you can see very clearly that Mourinho hasn't recovered from last season. I, for one, thought he had and thought he would. And I thought he'd take on Man United and push them on to another level, particularly when you look at the quality and level of signings that he's done. I thought that they'd go and win the league, but I actually think it was a bigger repair job than I thought, actually, and probably he did.
And in terms of whether it's a blip as well, I mean, the big thing is that, I mean, the last time we were here, we were talking after they beat Bournemouth, that Mourinho and Ibrahimovic had come in with the kind of shoulders back and kind of restored that arrogance to United. But that's immediately eroded. So we've gone from that, in the space of a week, we've gone from that to kind of a new kind of confidence with the club again to now this, where suddenly, particularly for me, I mean, for Mourinho, this must be, well, not quite a new situation given last season, but to immediately have all this doubt about him again. Like, he's never experienced it in his career, but now it's carried on. I mean, he thought he was kind of back to normal with those first three wins, but now already we have this kind of, all the old Chelsea issues returning, and a lot of questions to answer again.
Managers, big managers, make big decisions. Now, Pep's done that at City with Joe Hart, for instance. There's no bigger decision than working out the future of Wayne Rooney. He's not untouchable anymore, is he?
He shouldn't be. I mean, we're talking off air. I think his performance this season was kind of mixed. I think against Watford he was very poor. But I think the biggest issue with Rooney is basically that it's the three don't seem to be able to work together because they all end up occupying the same space. I mean, Pogba at his best, he can't seem to play this defensive midfield role that Mourinho has him in, or even as kind of as a six. He's best when he's kind of allowed to roam, allowed to run, allowed to almost be a Lampard, you know, as Mourinho had between 04 and 07. But to do that, that means he can't have a 10 in between Pogba and Ibrahimovic, and a 10 there is Rooney. I mean, and you could see it a few games this season. I mean, I think we said even from that first game against Bournemouth as well, that there were so many times that Ibrahimovic dropped back expecting Rooney to bomb on, and they just ended up being in the same space. And then behind them, Pogba has to kind of, you know, roam to the left to try and find space himself. So it just you know, furthers this perception that the team, this 11, doesn't really work, and there's one major issue.
You've got some reliance on Fellaini, physicality, you know. There was a really interesting stat, I thought, from the weekend, that Manchester United have run the least out of all 20 Premier League clubs. They don't press, unlike most of the other big teams. Is there something really fundamental wrong with that team?
I don't think, the biggest thing for me is I don't think he's got the balance right in midfield. And has he really got the players to kind of change that so dramatically? I actually think Fellaini does a really good job, actually, in difficult circumstances for Manchester United, because he does disrupt it and he does sort of have a discipline, and he is an annoyance, if you like. And I think every team kind of needs one. But I do think that I wondered from the first game at Bournemouth, which I was at, you know, I thought the Fellaini Herrera access worked really well. I'm not suggesting you could probably drop Pogba, but you just can't. You cannot sign
this
player.
They've made Pogba the future of the club now.
Absolutely. So, yeah. You know, you've got to basically, you know, build that team around. You know, that's what happens when you sign a player for £89 million. But what I'm trying to say is that the balance of that team is just not right.
And you've always protected Rooney, haven't you?
I'm a big fan of his. I really am. But look, I do think there's no getting away from it. He was particularly poor at Watford. But do I think that he's been the worst player on the pitch in the other game? No. I do think he's been made something of a scapegoat in a way. But I do think that you've got to make that harsh decision. You either play him in his correct position or you don't. Because basically you cannot accommodate him as some sort of passenger, which it seems to me that they're doing at the moment. I'm not fit. I don't feel that it's necessarily all Rooney's fault. But if you play him out of position, or if you play him in a system that's not going to work for him and not work, therefore, for the system, it's a complete and utter waste of time. Mkhitaryan, for me, you know, is a really good option when fit and when firing again. But where does he come in on, you know, kind of... I just think that at the moment, Rooney, I think the only position you should play him, for me, is a number 10. I know he likes playing off the left, and so maybe that could be an option. But at the moment, I just don't think that you're getting the best out of Rooney, and you're playing Rooney at the expense of the, you know, fluidity of the team.
If we accept, Migs, that basically Schweinsteiger's been sent away to do the dishes, you've got Schneiderlin, you've got Carrick, they've not been anywhere near it. Now, surely people with that quality have got to be included in the mix, haven't they?
Yeah, I mean, I would have thought that Schneiderlin was almost kind of a natural fit for maybe alongside Fellaini behind Pogba for a three, but Mourinho doesn't seem to fancy him. You wonder what he's been like in training. But in relation to that fluidity, which I think, you know, that sort of midfield would allow, I think one of the issues with Rooney in that sense is that if you look at all Mourinho's best teams, they're all built on kind of that breakneck pace, you know, they're lightning on the counter-attack. Where I think Rooney kind of, just the way he plays, naturally slows that down. It's not like he can immediately kind of turn and play one of those kind of through balls the way Snyder did for Mourinho's Inter. So as you're saying, I mean, if you took out Rooney and kind of reassemble that midfield, I think we would see that. But again, I suppose, as you say, if Mourinho at the moment doesn't fancy Schneiderlin and Carrick, you'd even wonder what the configuration of that. Like, it's possible he needs to go into the market again in January for that sort of player. Although Fellaini, Herrera and Pogba could possibly work.
What about Rashford, John? Is he undroppable now?
Well, I just think he makes such a difference, doesn't he? I still think that Rashford is at a stage of his career, then he's going to have to accept that he can't start every game. But I think that the wonderful thing about him is that when you bring him on, then he makes an even bigger impact against tired legs. But I just watched him in times yesterday during the game, and he was fantastic. The ball at his feet, he moves with such speed and such control. He's an absolute joy to watch, he really is.
Such maturity about his movement, isn't it?
Absolutely. He really has come from comparative nowhere in the last year or so. A player I think was being dug out at sort of kind of youth level for not being prolific enough and not scoring enough goals. And he's just taken this incredible leap. And he is the future of Manchester United as I see it. I mean, I just think that at the moment, United have got to understand where best to play him. Can you accommodate Rashford and Martial in the same team? I'm not sure. Sometimes, you know, I don't know, you kind of balance it up. But I think United have got lots of questions. But at the forefront of my mind is that you've got to accommodate Pogba. You've got to make a system that's going to work. But also, you've absolutely got to make Rashford, moving forward, a hub of that team. He's such a talent.
So another young talent, Kelechi Iheanacho. He's been involved in 24 goals in that very short career, average of, I think, it's one every 57 minutes. Why no hype about him?
Yeah, it's been oddly understated, hasn't it? I think that will change. I mean, even before the derby, there was such a kind of big controversy about Aguero and how much City would miss him. But it's kind of testament to Iheanacho and how easily he's fit into that team that they haven't missed him at all in two games, that he's going to just, the team has just carried on. It should change, but I suppose to a degree it sums up the kind of another difference between the two Manchester managers as well. And that, I mean, it's been such an old team, but we're seeing it kind of borne out that we're seeing proper proof of it that Guardiola is much more willing to throw young players in than Mourinho. I mean, Mourinho was so kind of reticent about putting in Rashford until Rashford essentially made himself, you know, undroppable. Guardiola had absolutely no hesitation about putting Iheanacho in from the start.
And he's brought in a few other players. You know, the goalkeeper, Angus Gunn's gone in. Three or four other players have been brought up from the academy. That proves to me that there's a big picture going on here.
Yeah, I remember doing the stats before. He's got an average of bringing through something like three academy products per season in his career, Guardiola, which is, I think, the highest in Europe other than Van Gaal, actually. So, he's kind of like the final piece of the City project in so many ways, but I suppose they'll want the final thrust as well to actually win those big trophies, which he sort of got a little bit irritated about at the weekend.
The sigh after that question when he was asked, are you going to do the quadruple, was just perfect.
I mean, after a performance like that, it was a fair question, I suppose. But
well, are you going to win a lot? Talk about hype. Now, it's one of your favourite fixtures, John, on Saturday. Arsenal v Chelsea. Arsene Wenger's always the centrepiece of that fixture, especially when Mourinho was at Chelsea. What's his mood like coming into it?
I think he'll be buoyed, actually, by a really good turnaround, sort of kind of, you know, three straight wins, isn't it? And kind of, you know, a real lift, I think, in the mood. I still wonder about kind of where the team is at and whether he's found the right kind of combinations and sort of setup of it. But I think that down the years, he's sort of almost flirted with dominating Chelsea. And, you know, they have enjoyed a couple of wins, haven't they, sort of in recent times. But I do think that in recent seasons, it's been completely dominated by the Mourinho v Wenger ugly spat. And I think he will enjoy the fact that actually it's a new, you know, figure in the opposite dugout.
Yeah.
And I think to that end, it'll give him some hope. And I guess it will give him some relief, because I think there's one thing that he absolutely hates in the build-up to these games. He's asking, sort of answering questions and being asked questions about Jose Mourinho and that spat and that head-to-head. But I do think it is an acid test for Arsenal, because I do think they've come through a difficult start. And I think we'll only know, particularly where Arsenal are and also Chelsea, after the 90 minutes are up on this game.
Because it changes so quickly in football, isn't it? You know, could Arsenal be prey to predators? You know, we're hearing a lot about Bellerin and Barcelona. Arsenal have got to keep this momentum going, almost to keep their players, haven't they?
Yeah, to an extent. Actually, from the Chelsea perspective as well, it is refreshing, even from our point of view, to not write about the Mourinho-Wenger dynamic and this, like, just to change the team. But, I mean, in relation to that, in terms of momentum, one thing you have to give Wenger credit for, and we talked here about a few weeks ago after they lost to Liverpool in the opening day, you know, it's actually hard to remember now, or it's hard to recall how difficult it was at that point, because it's been such a change. And this probably goes to why they so consistently qualify for the Champions League. Wenger is good. Even if he can't make a final push with his teams, he is very good at kind of developing this winning rhythm that we've seen. I mean, because they haven't really been brilliant in the last three games. The configuration team may not be right. The midfield hasn't always worked. I thought they were pretty poor against Paris Saint-Germain, but again, came away with a result. And these three wins in a row, they just kind of, they've developed this habit of kind of doing enough in these sort of fixtures. And yeah, it's going to be interesting, especially after Friday night at Stamford Bridge, the dynamic of this game.
Yeah. With Arsenal, you know, there is this hub of Coquelin, and he has basically almost, he's pushing Xhaka out of the side. Why is that?
I think it's because he's looking for partnerships. And I think he thinks then that Coquelin and Cazorla is the way forward. I think if you look at it over time, I think he just thinks Cazorla makes Arsenal tick. And I think he thinks that Cazorla has to be in there. And so what partnership works with Cazorla? And I think that so much of last season's kind of inconsistencies, if you like, and the reason why they sort of fell short in the title race was the absence, you know, sort of for such a long period of time of Cazorla. And I just think that, you know, he's got to find the right sort of balance in there. I mean, Xhaka for me is much more of a box-to-box player than sort of anchorman. And I wonder, therefore, is that the right setup with Cazorla? So therefore, you know, are you going to see sort of Xhaka bombing forward? And Cazorla is obviously in that 4-2-3-1 system. You know, you can't have two that sort of the first instinct is to get forward, really. And I think Xhaka is that sort of player. And Coquelin, I think, has risen to the challenge. I think he's done extremely well. But it is bizarre that Arsenal spend, you know, I think £34 million, basically. They say that's what it was on Xhaka. And he's yet to start on a regular basis. I mean, we all assumed, you know, he'd been rested last Saturday for the PSG game in midweek. Well, he hadn't been. He didn't start. And yet, when he came on the pitch, I thought he put a real stranglehold on the game and it gave them much more physical power and strength in the midfield. And that's when Arsenal almost turned the screw in Paris. You see him come on at Hull and he scores this spectacular goal, isn't it? I don't think his goal scoring is going to be his greatest strength, but he does like to drive forward. But I think it's almost finding that balance of that team. And I think Sanchez is a big issue with that because basically he's playing him through the middle rather than on the left. And I think for Arsenal, they've got to find a balance.
Still a lot of talk about Sanchez. He was linked with Manchester City at the weekend. There's been persistent talk about Juventus. Where do you see it?
I think that there's a lot of wrangling to be done over that contract. And I think that he's into the final 2 years. I think he wants a contract with a buyout clause. I also think he'll want something in excess of £200,000 a week. I think Arsenal in a situation whereby I think they might have panicked a couple of years ago, two, 3 years ago, and sold him last summer. But I do think they'll kind of try and ride it out and hope that he signs. And, you know, if he asks for a buyout, then he asks for a buyout. I think they're a lot more confident that Ozil will sign a contract before Sanchez. I wouldn't put it past Sanchez, but I do think that the big thing for Sanchez is knowing that he's got a buyout clause, knowing that he's going to win trophies, I think that's a big thing. And, you know, if they can sort of kind of almost guarantee that as much as anyone can, then I think he'll stay and sign. But I think that it's absolutely certain that he'll sign, not by any means.
Well, I remember one of the images last season was after they drew 2-2 at White Hart Lane and how irritated Alexis Sanchez was after, like, they dropped points because it was so big in the title race. And he does seem to get cattier than anyone anytime Arsenal don't win games. I suppose he's at that stage of his career now. He's had a bit of success again with Chile with two Copa Americas in a row where he kind of went, right, he's going to be, 30 in two, 3 years' time, and kind of wants to fulfil his talent and actually make sure he has the medals to show for it.
With Chelsea, where do you think they're at the moment? You know, Conte, you were both at the game on Friday night. Conte read the riot act, apparently, in the dressing room afterwards, which is to be expected given his temperament. You know, some talk about him not being happy with the standard of signings. Where are we with Chelsea at the moment?
I think probably undeniably taking a bit of a step back. Maybe the kind of all those late goals and the three games in between painted a slightly false picture. Because they did, I mean, even those games, they look like a work in progress. But one that had come, I mean, the difference, I know it was Burnley, who were probably one of the weaker teams in the league this season, but the difference between, say, the West Ham game and the opening weekend of the season, the Burnley game, and I was at both, and the West Ham game, what they were trying to do didn't really work. In the Burnley game, it was like, this was Conte's Italy. They were just kind of, they were flying. You know, you could even see, like, at their best Conte teams, they overwhelm you with kind of these, you know, this buzzing of movement around the box, but there's all of control, and you can see with Conte, like the team seems to be kind of running all over the place when you're watching the pitch, but then you can see him on the sideline. He's giving calls, and every time he gives a call, there's kind of, you know, a very angled ball that goes across. So it's all this kind of, it's coordinated chaos almost. Whereas on Friday, it was just chaos, really. I mean, they were completely overwhelmed by Liverpool. Sure, I think Liverpool were 2-0 up before Chelsea even had a shot on target.
Mm. What about the decline of Gary Cahill? That seemed pretty marked on Friday night.
Yeah, it does really. I think Chelsea's, you know, defence is a massive concern. I think if you look at it, Conte has got to rebuild. I think, you know, Ivanovic was really poor, I think. And I do think that Cahill probably feels the pressure. And I think he's looking like a man who's playing under pressure because he knows that Luiz is being brought in for big money. I think John Terry, when fit, always plays. And so where's that leave, you know, Gary Cahill? Particularly, I think you've also got Zouma coming back. And I think Cahill is playing like a player at the moment who probably thinks, maybe my first team, you know, sort of kind of reign is coming to an end. Because that's got big, you know, knock-on effects. Because if you look at it, he's going to start for England while he's in the Chelsea team. As soon as he loses his Chelsea place, in my view, then he loses his England place. And I think he's under, you know, big threat for club and country at the moment. And he looks like it.
What about Liverpool? Miguel, dare to dream?
It's amazing, actually. With Liverpool, almost, the proof isn't to win these games. It's to go and, you know, win against the Burnleys, against Hull, against all, you know, the sides that have kind of traditionally... I mean, this is actually, it's an issue that precedes Klopp's time. I remember in 97, say, when Liverpool were in a title race, you know, they go and beat Arsenal one week, then lose to Coventry the next. And here we are 20 years on, even like under Klopp, it's almost, that's become an even greater issue because it goes back to last season. You know, they have these incredible results in Europe, but then drop points at the weekend in games they should be winning. And I suppose, I mean, this season's only 5 games old, but we've seen it again. So it's, you know, it's about now developing that rhythm to go with these kind of massive performances. And I do wonder with Klopp's approach sometimes whether it's actually better suited to playing against the big teams because he has something to react to and kind of he kind of can work in their flaws rather than kind of taking the game to a team that may be more willing to frustrate them. But then at the same time, on Friday, what was particularly impressive and what could be promising was the fact that they actually completely overwhelmed Chelsea. They just imposed their game on Chelsea. It wasn't a case of kind of working their way through what Chelsea did. They just, I mean, Chelsea couldn't get out of their half for so long in the first half.
Mm. Real emotional intensity about that team. And also, what struck me in the aftermath was, you know, Klopp going around the pitch and bear-hugging every player. And they seem to be loving it. Look, we love him because, you know, he gives great quote, doesn't he? But he is central to the whole Liverpool story, Klopp, now. Can they maintain that emotional intensity? Because it'll be difficult over the course of a season.
I personally think that Liverpool will finish in the top four. Do I think they can win the title? Well, I think they're an outside shot, but obviously everyone, I think, is dependent on the moment, on Man City blowing up. But I just feel that without the added distraction of the Champions League or the Europa League, then I do think it gives Liverpool a great edge. I think they've bought well. I think Mane has given them pace and power. I do think it's that intensity that will be the test as to where they can keep those physical levels up for the course of the season. From what I hear, he works them so hard in training. I think that will be the other test. And, you know, it was really interesting, wasn't it? He took over last October. And by kind of Christmas time, he was kind of counting the body count, really, because it was just the players were falling like flies and kind of they didn't have that base of fitness training and therefore they were getting pulls and strains. This time, he's got to have done a really strong pre-season, hopefully giving them that base layer of fitness. But I think that will be the test. I think The one thing they've got in their favour is no European football. Their biggest enemy is actually probably arguably themselves.
And you could almost say the same a bit about Tottenham in terms of Pochettino drives them really hard on the training ground, loads of tour days. It was quite worrying. Yes, I know you were there, John, weren't you? That you've got Harry Kane, which looks quite a bad ankle injury. Eric Dyer's off. Have they got a strong enough squad to cope?
It's strange with Tottenham. I mean, they've actually got a very wide squad, or a very deep squad, but whether you're going to trust them to do the same role as kind of at the core, maybe 14 players. Because, I mean, we've already seen yesterday, Dembele makes such a massive difference to our team. I mean, the jump in the side from when he's in it and when he's not in it is incredible. Just they look so much more controlled, and it gives all that that power and pace they play with just so much more, just poise. I think they lack a bit of depth in that sense, Spurs. You know, that as big as that squad is, it lacks kind of proper first 11 quality beyond maybe 14, 15 players.
Mm. That was a 1-0 thrashing they handed out to Sunderland, wasn't it? Yeah. What are your impressions of Spurs and how they're going? Obviously, they're still unbeaten.
Yeah, I'm rather like Maguire. I do think that the squad is the biggest issue. And I think balancing the added pressure of the Champions League. Look, you know, I think even Pochettino sort of admitted earlier in the season, you can rest players and rest and rotate for the Europa League. But when it comes to the Champions League, everybody wants to play. Yeah. And that's the problem that he's got. All the first 11 want to play in the Premier League and all the first 11 want to play in the Champions League as well. And it's finding that balance, I think, is so difficult. I think it's really interesting that Moussa Dembélé, I think, was one of the most underrated players of last season. I'd put him in the top three midfielders in the league. I think he's absolutely fantastic. The way that he combines a kind of physical strength, you know, sort of a tenacity in midfield, but also driving forward. And I think when you lose players like that, you realise that either Tottenham have to change the way that they play or go in a different direction, really. And I think that their squad will be the biggest thing, really, for me. I think it's surprising that Spurs didn't invest more and bring in kind of three or four more players, because I think their squad looks a little bit more fragile. I think Janssen obviously is good backup for Kane, but do they have other options, you know, in defence, in midfield? I'm not sure whether they've got enough options to kind of really keep it going on all fronts. I think it's going to be one or the other for Spurs, either the Champions League or the top four.
The other team that's, you know, really making a good fist of it so far is Everton. You know, we talked about the Koeman effect. He's obviously training them well, a lot of accent on fitness. How far can they go?
I think they possibly had a slightly forgiving opening few fixtures. Now, that's not to take away, I mean, because they're fixtures they would have struggled in last season, or in the last 2 years maybe. So I wouldn't get too far ahead of ourselves yet. But I think they would be a good bet for, you know, top seven European places. It's a well-balanced squad. They've got maybe one of the best forwards in the league. So they've got the real test going to be, I suppose, by December, and we could actually have a similar situation to Southampton 2014-15. If you remember, they were top four right up until December, actually, but partially because of a slightly easier start to the season, which Koeman is enjoying again this time. I could see it along those lines, maybe.
Idris, a guy playing that sort of holding role in front of the back four, he looks to me to be one of the signings of the summer.
It's just incredible find, absolutely incredible find. I mean, people tell me that his stats were amazing last season, even for Aston Villa, and playing in a relegated team. And they basically met a buyout clause for £7 million. And he looks an absolute snip. But I think time and again, I think clubs would have looked at that and said, well, he looks a good player, but he's been in a relegated team. Yeah. So what does that say about him? But I think the art of a scout and the art of really good recruitment is being able to identify that player and the strength of the player, even in a weak team. And obviously it served, you know, kind of, you know, Leicester well. And now obviously they've got sort of Steve Walsh. One of the most eye-catching stories, I thought, of last week was that basically Leicester had targeted a guy basically before they signed Kante. And they'd failed in getting him, so went for Kante. Now, can you imagine just the dynamics? Yeah. And he's so reminiscent in many ways, isn't he, of Kante in the way that he sort of patrols midfield. He makes things happen. But he's incredible energy. And I just think that the way that he sets off with Gareth Barry. 600 games, you know, should sort of kind of really get a huge recognition, I think, you know. But they look a really good pair. And I think the way that Koeman has set up that team is really exciting.
You're going to have to finish looking at the bottom end of the table, Miguel. West Ham is thinking the place out defensively. Stoke are in trouble. There's a few murmurs going on at Swansea. Are we already in the start of the season where we're thinking, are any managers under pressure here?
Well, I mean, we could be. I mean, what's really worrying with West Ham and Stoke is not just that they're being beaten, but that in some games they're getting absolutely battered, particularly Stoke. And they've both become so easy to play against. That's the biggest worry of all. I mean, it's some transformation from West Ham. They went from last season, again, to a side that was regularly pulling off big wins. I mean, what was it? They beat West Ham, or sorry, they beat Arsenal, Chelsea, Liverpool, United over the course of the season. And was it Spurs as well? Maybe not Spurs. But they've gone from that now to kind of just being pushed around by almost everyone they play. You wonder, I mean, this obviously seems to be going beyond the stadium issue. And then with Stoke, again, is this one of the offsets of this kind of famous transformation that's been happening? They're obviously trying to play a kind of a more aesthetic brand of football. They've brought in so many more footballers. But now, have they lost that old bite they used to? Because, that defence has started to crumble.
Well, they've conceded 50 goals this year. Yeah. That's over 24 games. And that's 8 more than any other Premier League team. That tells you everything, doesn't it?
It does. And, you know, there's been a few suggestions that sort of Mark Hughes doesn't work so much on the defence, but he's more attack-minded manager. You look at Mark Hughes and his makeup, you would have thought, actually, that he would have been that well-organised thing. But, look, I tend to think, if you look at Stoke's recent history, they've always started really badly. Yeah. And they've come back and sort of kind of excelled. The one thing that worries me about this time is that they finished last season so badly. And they've gone into this season repeating what they did at the end of last season. Maybe giving them the benefit of the doubt, Boney arrived late. I think that Mark Hughes is a really good manager. I think he does do it over a period of time, and I don't think Stoke will panic. But I do think it's a serious concern this time. 1 point on the board is just not good enough.
I would actually be more worried for Bilic than you, I think, just because how different that situation is now. Mm. And because something needs to change at West Ham, given how difficult the season has started on all aspects.
Yeah, the stadium, I think, is a massive concern for West Ham. And, like, you've got to balance that. It's time and again, we've seen clubs move to stadiums and not really be able to embrace it, and the opponents come and raise their game. Mm. That seems to me what's happening. Mm.
Well, October's a mad month for managers. So here's a scenario for you. Sparky leaves Stoke and is replaced by Tony Pulis. Stranger things have happened. Thanks for joining us here on the Football Writers Podcast.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.